Hi, and welcome to Being Lutheran, a podcast dedicated to proclaiming the excellencies of Jesus Christ and the biblical theology expressed in the Lutheran Confessions. Today, Pastor Jason Goodham, Pastor Brett Bowe, and Pastor Adam Osher begin a journey traveling through the formula of Concord. Being Lutheran is sponsored by the Free Lutheran Bible College and Seminary in Plymouth, Minnesota. Whatever your vocation, start here, go anywhere, grounded in God's Word.
Welcome to the Being Lutheran podcast. I am Pastor Brett Bowe, and I'm joined by
Pastor Jason Goodham
and Pastor Adam Osher.
Welcome back, guys. We are starting a whole new, epoch? Is that the right word? No.
Epoch. Wow.
That was very aggressive.
Sounds dispensational, kind of.
Welcome to the Being Lutheran podcast.
I'm not a closet.
We're now dispensational.
I'm not a closeted dispy.
Much like the latest Rolling Stones going away tour, we are entering the final chapter of the Being Lutheran podcast until the next final chapter. We're starting the formula today.
Yes. Yeah, we are launching out into a months-long look at the formula of Concord, walking through each article.
Yep, 13 articles.
13, right. So like we did with the small called articles, we'll have four episodes per article.
And
we'll,
Usually,
typically, unless we want to divvy it up more. But today, we're going to jump right in, but we do want to give a little bit of a preface, I guess you could say, or an intro to the formula as we get going. And we, as always, we encourage you to read the Book of Concord, and if you want to use Jason's daily Book of Concord readings.
Yeah, dailyboc.substack.com to get Monday through Friday readings of the Book of Concord emailed to you. If you do it faithfully, you read through the whole Book of Concord once every year.
Yeah, yep. So we are jumping into the formula, and I guess I like the real, I don't know if it's like the intro paragraph there, but I think it's a good little bit of a flavor of what this is, and you can certainly read more, but I'll just read this for us to get us going here. But this brief intro to the formula says, a thorough, pure, correct, and final restatement and explanation of a number of articles of the Augsburg Confession, on which for some time there has been disagreement among some of the theologians adhering to this confession, resolved and reconciled under the guidance of the Word of God and the comprehensive summary of our Christian teaching. And I feel like I could just keep going.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah, run on sentence a little bit. But I like how this little intro is a reminder of what we're doing here. And I think we mentioned in a couple of previous episodes that we've gone through most of these topics before as we've walked through each of the other parts of the Book of Concord. And so this is kind of like our final go-through as we've looked at whether it's original sin or what we're going to be talking about today and any of the other topics. But Jason, is that a good way to think of it? I think it's a fourth or fifth time we've gone through these topics.
For some of these topics, it will be. And it naturally raises the question. It doesn't beg the question. It raises the question why do we need another confession? If we covered these topics very thoroughly in the Augsburg Confession, the Apology, if Luther restated them in the Small Called Articles, if there are shades and echoes of them in the catechisms, what are we doing here? And the real answer to this is, 50 years have passed between the writing of the Formula of Concord, or the writing of the Augsburg Confession and the writing of the Formula of Concord. A lot has happened in 50 years. The two most significant events is Luther's died, and so there's no longer a figurehead in front of the Lutheran Church, which wasn't really the Lutheran Church other than for people, you know, using that as a pejorative. The other thing it comes down to is, as with so many things, it's Philip Melanchthon's fault. when it comes down to it, we can blame everything that happens on Philip Melanchthon and Charles Finney. And so
one
that was a
another.
Joke. Yeah. And Melanchthon wanted to give ground back to the Roman Catholics. Melanchthon was timid. And so you have this faction right after Luther dies, basically called the Philippists, who want to give especially the doctrine of Holy Communion up for the sake of merging with different groups. It's really interesting. First it was with the Roman Catholics, but then it ends up being with the Reformed, that you give that up for the sake of external unity. And so in the mid 1560s, early 1560s maybe, you have this group of faithful Lutheran theologians that are called the Genesio Lutherans, G-N-E-S-I-O.
I'm not going to try to say that.
Yeah.
Just, yeah,
it
right
sounds very similar to apotelismaticum.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And the Genesio Lutherans are the faithful to the doctrine Lutherans. Out of that group, they decide to restate what's going on in these theological battles, both forward-facing to the Roman Catholic Church, still a threat, although their Lutherans are allowed to exist now, and also on the second front with the Reformed and the followers of Calvin, followers of Beza, you know, that sort of thing. And this way you get 13 articles. And it's, we need to clarify what we believe, and we need to clarify what we reject based on what we believe.
Yeah. Yeah, Adam, you were saying before we started recording that you like the formula, and would you explain that, the positive statements and the negative statements side by side there?
Yeah, well, I just, the thing that I like about it is, you talked about, you know, Luther, you know, writing the Schmalkald articles, very raw, very just basic, you know, kind of thing. You have the Augsburg Confession, which is pure, good, wonderful, but a very nascent stages of the Lutheran, you know, the Lutheran teachings. This has allowed some time to really solidify, you know, solid declaration, no pun intended, but really to solidify what it is they're teaching. And the phrase at the beginning that you read, Brett, which I think is something that I feel like I'm going to start just identifying every time I state something, I'm going to start it with a thorough, clear, and correct, and final repetition.
Yeah.
Every one of your syllabi.
Yes. Yeah. A thorough, clear, and correct, you know, way of viewing this thing. But it's true. It is thorough, it is clear, and it is correct. And I feel like both, it states, and, you know, we believe, teach, and confess these things, we reject these things.
Right.
It helps you to think through some of this theology in a more, again, the word thorough, in a more thorough way. And for me, I think I understood Lutheran doctrine better by reading the formula than any other work in the Book of Concord. And that's not to take away, my own lack of intellect or my own way my brain works or whatever. But I really do appreciate the formula. So I've been looking forward to this as we get to go look at this a little more closely.
Right, and this is kind of another, you know, we like to say here that we're not just talking about what we're against.
Nope.
Although that's definitely a part of it. But I like how there's this back and forth. This is what we're for, and this is what we're against. They're both of them together.
It's always in this is what we're against in light of what we're for.
Yeah.
And this is why we're against it. And, you know, I agree with Adam. The precision here for helping to understand Lutheran doctrine, there are a few things for me that clicked into place because I did a slow reading of the formula.
Hmm.
I think after the third article of the Creed and the large catechism, mm-hmm. Article 11 of the formula is probably the best part of the whole Book of Concord. And that's the article on election.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just think it's magnificent.
Yeah. Sure. I actually took that, just that article, dropped it into my files section in Populi, because, you know, in Romans we talk about election, you know, at different times, and I just dropped that file in there and say, if you have questions, this is, you know, read this. it's thorough, clear, and correct.
Nice.
And it best explains the Lutheran view of election, and I've used it that way.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, before we move on to the content of Article 1, it's worth noting, so the authors, the formulators of the Formula of Concord are one of Luther's students, Martin Chemnitz, and then a friend of Chemnitz, an associate of Chemnitz. Yeah, the second Martin. Jacob Andrei are the two main authors of the formula. And the saying goes about Chemnitz, without the second Martin, we would never know anything of the first, or something to that effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Chemnitz is just such a huge, probably the most underrated figure in Lutheran history. Hmm. For me, it's between Chemnitz and Gerhard, and I know they're both well-known, but they just simply do not get the attention they deserve in light of Luther being the figurehead of the Lutheran Church.
Mm-hmm. Too bad we can't have Chemnitz come to a Being Lutheran conference sometime.
That would be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
There is a Martin Chemnitz Society. Found this out last year.
Really?
Cool. Yeah.
Very cool.
The
is funny, it like the Sverdrup Society?
I have no idea. I didn't look into it. I just found out it existed.
Huh. The my introduction to Chemnitz was in seminary when we had to read his, what was it? It was on the Two Natures of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is. So if it, okay, so as much as I like thorough, complete,
don't,
and correct, or
don't
whatever,
read it before bed.
It is
or read it
brutal.
Before bed.
Yeah, yeah, it cures right. insomnia. It is, and the thing of it is what I found to be interesting about it was it's so overwhelmingly thorough. Yep. That's the part that just, it's like I got your point like 80 pages ago. You know, I believe you. I trust you. You've proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is what the church has taught for the
Mercy.
Last 1500
yeah.
years. just put it in like a tweet or something and I'll trust you from now on.
But both Chemnitz and Gerhard are like that because there are kind of bad actors trying to ride into the Reformation on the coattails of the Lutherans, and they wanted to work so hard at making sure they weren't misunderstood. They both do that. That's interesting. I think Two Natures gets a bad rap. Mm-hmm. I think mostly when you give it to bleary-eyed, bloodshot-eyed seminarians and say, "Hey, read this," people are like, "Oh man, that's terrible." If you take it in small chunks and you read it slowly, I think it's great. That being said. Chemnitz's best work. Well, the one he's most...
The Lord's Supper.
So Chemnitz has the Lord's Supper. He has the commentary on the Council of Trent, which is like a three-volume thing.
What's the Loki...
Yeah.
John Blink.
Theologist.
Yeah.
That one. Chemnitz wrote a catechism called the Enchiridion, and it's great. It is really, really good, and I think that's my favorite Chemnitz book is Enchiridion.
Nice. All right, well, let's get into, unless you...
Sounds like a Tolkien, you know, Tolkien work, or is that the Silmarillion?
The Silmarillion and the Enchiridion.
Like, sounds like sequel works to me, one's the sequel of the other. All right.
Fewer hobbits in the Enchiridion.
Yes. Well, I guess, you know, speaking of some of the historical backdrop, there is a little bit of historical background getting into the Article 1 on original sin, and it surrounds this dude named Matthias Flacius. And so, Jason, who is that guy, and what does he have to do with this controversy?
I think he is unfortunately one of my favorite Lutherans, and he was a Lutheran. Look him up on Wikipedia sometime. His drawing is something else. Man, the dude had facial hair game through the roof. It was amazing.
I have
amazing.
Not done that.
Yeah, so Flacius, look him up. He was an early Lutheran along the lines of Luther and Melanchthon. Flacius was from the region of Croatia, or what we call Croatia now. He studied under both Melanchthon and Luther, fathered 18 children with two different women. His first wife died. Very fertile young man. died in 1575, so 5 years before the publishing of the Book of Concord. Flacius gets a really bad rap, and deservedly so, because basically what he ends up doing is why we teach the concept of the two ditches, so that there's a ditch on either side of the road.
Or a pendulum.
That's or a another pendulum, way. Yeah.
It's swinging one way or the other.
Yeah. Flacius was so concerned about Pelagianism that that we get no credit whatsoever. He ended up a heretic, teaching what he ends up teaching, and then he's a stubborn Croat. It's the problem in all of this, is he doubles down on it when he's confronted. He ends up teaching that the nature of man is sinful. So that in our very nature, being, and essence, we are sinful. Again, that I've heard, although I think this is a different case, I've heard kind of Nestorius get explained in much the same way that Nestorius was trying so hard to not be an Arian that he committed heresy on the other side. But this is exactly what we're talking about, is if you react, if the core of your doctrinal confession is reacting to someone else's error, it doesn't guarantee you'll be orthodox. Is the principle at play here. And so Flacius ends up teaching that so we talk about our sinful nature, and we'll get into that in these next 3.5 episodes.
Right.
But he taught the very core that we are sin, and that the very essence and nature of humanity is sin.
And what's the problem with that?
So the problem with that, let's take the short way because we've taken the long way so far.
I asked the question. That's really Brett's question.
Yeah.
You just keep talking,
Jason.
Right.
The problem with this is in the end, it makes God the creator of sin.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why it's heresy. That's why we condemn it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the way that I've thought about this, and it might be wrong, but that whole idea of if the human nature itself is sin, you're right, because and the formula talks about this, or this article talks about this, where God was the creator of Adam and Eve before the fall, of Adam and Eve's soul before, you know, the fall, but also ours in his image after, even though it's a fallen image, even though and to me, the comparison or the analogy, you know, is like a software, you know, update, right? That is, the software update is good for whatever, you know, your device or whatever. It's great, but if it's corrupted, it's completely worthless. And it is the corruption, which is not the fault of the software or the program, right?
It's Microsoft case, probably.
Well, you know, let's not go there. And again, that analogy is going to break down, as most do. But at the end of the day, it's that reality that the software, what is there is good. It's created in the image of God. It's just corrupted beyond usability.
Yep.
I like that illustration. Yeah.
God makes us by hand still, but he makes us from imperfect material because of the hereditary sin of Adam. Mm-hmm. And so there's a couple lines we have to trace. One of the things I want to get out of the way right away so we don't lose it in the shuffle, it has become, although less so in the very near past, but in recent American evangelicalism, it has become in vogue or chic to talk about losing the image of God. And this article does not permit us to speak about sin in that way. What they clarify, and it's elsewhere in the Book of Concord, we don't talk about losing the image of God. We talk about losing original righteousness. Mm-hmm. And there's a big distinction there. We are still created in the image of God.
Right.
We still bear the image of God, although it's been corrupted, tainted, disfigured by sin. But what we lost is that state that Adam and Eve were in before the fall, which was original righteousness. And to co-opt language from Joel Bierman, we are no longer rightly oriented to God. So we've lost that righteousness. This is at stake with original sin, is that we are no longer inherently good. That does not make God the propagator of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And it also doesn't make us completely, you know, like we still are image bearers.
Right.
And becomes very important because of what Christ does in the incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we talk about with this is, what are the consequences? What does that mean? And this is where you will notice a distinction in historical theology. So historical theology is talking about the historical development of theology. In Melanchthon's time, at the penning of the Augsburg Confession, what was the big discussion between the Lutherans and the Roman Catholic Church was concupiscence. Right, it's the nature of our sinful desires. Now, 50 years later, mm-hmm. the issue at hand is, what does human nature consist of? And so there's still talk of concupiscence, but now we're talking about these philosophical terms, the essence and nature, mm-hmm. substance, accidents. We're going to get into all of that.
Right, and I think the nuance of this is going to be important. And I'm thinking, too, maybe this is just me having my pastor hat on, but I think that this sort of discussion has an impact on how every Christian thinks of themselves and their place in God's world. I could see how someone could take the idea, like what Flacius was saying, and be just launched into complete despair of, you know, I'm just thoroughly, you know, playing off of the worst of, you know, the song, you know, I'm a worm, and, you know, and all of this, and just wrapping it together with shame as well. But I think that the precision here to kind of take our time and I don't know if it's, I've heard this somewhere where they say sometimes you need a scalpel and sometimes you need a chainsaw, you know, depending on the type of work you're doing. But we're just taking the scalpel and just slowly looking at, scripturally we see the distinction here that is helpful for us, just so that we don't lose, that people don't lose hope, but that we're able to see our original sin, our sin being dealt with, also being made in God's image, created, a good creation of God.
And theologically, that's very important, because when Christ came, he came with a human nature.
Yep.
That was without sin. And in the same way that we bore Adam's sin, and his the original sin idea comes from him, right? That problem comes from him. And we are culpable because we were like him, bore his nature. But Christ came to bear that same nature yet without sin. So just as Adam was representative to corrupt us thoroughly by his own sin, Christ was representative to cleanse us thoroughly by his righteousness. And that's the, you know, Adam's one act of sin, Christ's one act of righteousness language in Romans 5 goes back and forth, but it entirely predicates on the reality that Jesus had this human nature that was not sinful, that was not bad. It was perfectly excellent and good in the design that God had created. And he came without sin to deal with sin. And that you have to make that distinction, because if all of a sudden we're completely corrupted and our nature is wrong, then Christ wasn't like us and couldn't pay for our sin. And that would absolutely leave us in the despair that Brett's talking about.
Yeah, I think what you said, Brett, was really well stated, because the precision here is absolutely necessary. And what I was thinking as you were talking about, reminded me, we need the same kind of precision here as we need with the Trinity. Where if you go too far in any direction, it's not just whoops, it's you've committed actual heresy. They talk, and we'll probably start the next episode going into these categories, but Chemnitz talks here in this article, disagreement or conflict in the area of original sin affects what you believe, teach, and confess about creation. It affects the article of redemption. Mm. It affects sanctification.
Wow.
It affects how you understand the resurrection. It will, in fact, they don't go into this, it will, in fact, affect how you understand the means of grace and baptism.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, right.
A disagreement in the nature of original sin accounts for at least part of the disagreements between Pado and Credo Baptists.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And
in the nature of, well, did you say justification?
Justification. Yeah. So redemption is redemption, one of the first things that goes with this, because Adam said, is if we don't have an adequate substitute, we can't be redeemed. And if you, in your confession, rule out the possibility that Jesus could be fully human, you rule out that Jesus can be Savior.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining us. Please look us up on the web at beinglutheran.com. Also, invite a friend to check us out on Spotify and iTunes. Please join us next week as Pastor Jason, Pastor Brett, and Pastor Adam continue their discussion on the formula of concord. If you would like more information on the Bible School or the seminary, please visit our website at flbc.edu. God bless you and have a great week.